I'm an addict. My name's Carol. My dogs are going to hear this tape and they're going to wonder why they couldn't come. I'd like to say before I speak any place that I'm not responsible for what you may hear me say, only for what I actually do say. And anything I share taken out of context could be extremely hazardous to your health. This weekend I'm gonna expand on that a little bit. Anything shared here this weekend taken out of context could be extremely hazardous to your local fellowship. This is the very first time that I've spoken since I spoke in Georgia in 1983. Is that when it was? Gripner 2? This is the first time that I've spoken, no, let me finish, that I've felt excited and not afraid to share. Excited about being able to talk about what you guys have given me. When I found Narcotics Anonymous, it was at a convention. Some people had sent a flyer, and we couldn't imagine why in the world they sent a flyer to Michigan for something that was going on in Georgia, for heaven's sake. Made no sense whatsoever. A couple of us in our local fellowship were in a lot of pain, emotional pain. And that pain made us willing to go somewhere, to travel a little bit. And when I think about that, I think about going down to that book, to that convention, and you know, I was a member at the time of three different fellowships. And I was a cross-addicted alcoholic with emotional problems, trying to keep things simple. You know, today, you know, it's mind-boggling which first step was really first. But it all made perfect sense to me at the time, which tells me where I was. We came to this convention and expected it to be like a convention of a young people's group that we had been to. And we brought board games. And large literature. I had just large literature in my suitcase. And I figured if NA was anything like in Georgia, what it was like where I came from, I was going to be able to help those poor sick folks. And I walked into this hotel filled with addicts, most of them clean, I think. And it was real overwhelming. That was my first convention. And it was real scary, and it was also real exciting for me. The very first person that I met, and I'd been clean for a little over 3 years at the time. I'd been sober for 3.5 years, and don't ever forget it. And this guy came up to me, and you know, everybody was hugging everybody else, and we didn't do that. You know, we hugged the people that we knew real well, and everybody else, we shook their hands. And this guy came up to me and gave me this great big hug, and he introduced himself, and he said, "So, how long have you been on the program?" And I said, "Well, I've been sober for 3.5 years." And you know when you say something in a meeting and or to your sponsor or to somebody else, and as soon as you come, you know, the words come out of your mouth, they get this little smile on their face. And you know, you know you said something stupid, and sometimes you just don't really know what it is. Well, I had that feeling because there was this little smile on this guy's face. And he said, I don't come to functions or go to meetings to talk about this. He said, I looked up a dictionary definition of the word sober, and it meant to be somber, serious, moderate, and not drunk. I can't afford to limit myself in my recovery this way. And I share this every time I speak because it was the turning point of my life. But at the time, I thought, oh God, who is this guy? And I looked around and I thought, oh geez, are they all like this? It's going to be a long weekend. And it was a long weekend for me, but not for those reasons. And then this guy, you know, said, okay, well, I've been straight for 3.5 years. And he said, I don't come to meetings or social functions in Narcotics Anonymous to talk about sexual preference. Okay, what are you looking for? What do you want here? And he talked to me about being clean and about recovery from the disease of addiction, and that being clean meant more than being abstinent from drugs, that it meant cleaning up inside. And I didn't want to hear what this man was saying, and I did. It touched me inside where nothing had ever fit before. I don't know how it happened. I had gone to Narcotics Anonymous meetings for at least a year before I came to that convention. And I know that I can read. And I had read through the steps. We had, you know, a little white book and a couple of IPs. And I had read through the steps. And I know that I read Powerless Over Our Addiction. But my mind told me Powerless Over Drugs. That's what they told me in another fellowship. And, you know, they told me change the words. Fine. And it was. I just changed any words I didn't like. As Carol sees it, I thought there ought to be a book. I still kind of do, as a matter of fact. And, you know, we talked just a little bit more, and I'm thinking all the time real spiritually, how can I get away from this guy? Oh, jeez. And then he asked me if I'd seen the basic text of NA. And I said, well, no. And I'd seen the gray book at that time. We got it, and, like, we looked at it, and I thought about writing my story, but I knew I couldn't do it. I was real good at living down to my expectations then. And I knew I couldn't do it. And I put it away because it scared me to death. And at this convention, there was this little comic book looking thing. Now you remember I had the large literature in my suitcase. And this man, this arrogant little asshole, showed me this book. And so, of course, I was open-minded and I was, like, real open to it, right? And I opened that book and I was looking for something that was going to disqualify what I was looking at, something that wouldn't fit. And I opened the book, and, like, the very first thing that I saw was a section of a line in Chapter 7 that says, we cannot save our face and our ass at the same time. And I'd been around enough at that point to think that, like, there might be a message here. And so I started leafing through the book. And And a couple of the things that I saw that day that really struck me were the introduction. What a novel place to begin looking, you know. And, you know, it explained in real clear language that alcoholism was too limited a term for us. Our problem is not a specific substance, it's a disease called addiction. And I felt a surrender. I don't know how to explain it other than I felt a surrender. And I knew that it was the truth. I knew that it was my truth. I didn't want it to be, but I knew that it was. And I went on, and I'd had trouble with a third step for a long time. You know, I didn't want you to get close to me because then you'd know that I didn't just turn it over. You know, something's bothering you, just turn it over. I could talk some real good stuff in meetings about, oh, I just turned it over and I'm living happily ever after now because I don't use. Looks good, sounds good. But anybody that got close to me knew that I was still running through people's lives like a tornado. It wasn't about living clean. I kept seeing these different things in this book and feeling this surrender and knowing that it was the truth. And in the emotional pain that I was in, I'd been told before I went to this convention that I was physically ill. And they told me that I had, that there was a chance that I had one of three things, either Hodgkin's disease, leukemia, or something that they called acquired immune deficiency syndrome. And there wasn't a test about that. There wasn't much known about that. All I knew was that I was sick and I was scared. And I needed something outside of myself because what I had been doing wasn't working. And at the right time, I was given something that worked. I was also given, because of my health, the opportunity to travel and to be gone from work more than I would have been able to normally, without quitting my job, of course. And I went to meetings where people talked about the first step of Narcotics Anonymous. And then I went home where people got angry when I talked about Narcotics Anonymous being different than any other fellowship. When I was at that convention, I had talked to someone else, too, about why NA had been in Flint, Michigan for the same amount of time it had been in their city. And there were like seven meetings a week there, and there were two or three meetings in Flint, Michigan, where I lived. And those meetings were six struggling meetings. And this other person talked to me about commitment to Narcotics Anonymous, about betting your life on Narcotics Anonymous, about commitment and follow through, something that I knew very, very little about. And that weekend was a real long one for me, and the reason that it was that I knew that when I went home, it was going to be about me making a commitment to NA, or I'd never be able to look myself in the eye again. And the only other person from my local fellowship that had gone down there with me was someone that I had a real personality problem with. You know, we dated for a while, and I broke up with him because he was a real arrogant person. Funny how there might be a pattern there. I remember hearing this stuff about Narcotics Anonymous and knowing that I was going to have to go back and make this commitment and looking at this man and thinking, out of everybody in Flint, why did it have to be him? And today I know that I had to practice anonymity. I had to practice anonymity. I went home and, you know, when I got this book and was so excited about it, we bought seven copies. And we took it home, and we were so excited. You know, we were just like really on fire. And I went home, and I thought, I'm going to go home, I'm going to show these folks this book, I'm going to tell them what I found, and everybody's going to go, oh boy, yeah, we're going to do this too. And they didn't do that. They said, if it was so good down there, why don't you go back? And that sounded real good for a while. I learned about service because there was no one else to do it. I had always before been the kind of person that if you need a volunteer, I dropped something until it was all over with. And then I'd come back and say, oh, that wasn't bad. I knew nothing about doing the right thing for the right reasons. I knew nothing about doing something for someone else unconditionally, not expecting the big reward afterwards. I knew very, very little about spiritual principles. And, you know, I heard somebody earlier talk about they showed each other. You know, during the writing of the book, you know, they practically lived together for long periods of time. And they showed each other. And those same people showed me. See, I'm kind of the second generation, younger, wiser. Don't ever forget it. I don't really need these glasses. These are my teeth. I paid for them. These people showed me that you don't just talk about this stuff and then go home, that you live it. This first convention had been exciting, and we ran on that excitement, and you know, then we went 285 miles once a week for this nearest meeting, this nearest NA meeting, where we could hear the first step of NA talked about in a meeting. And that became my home group for a while. And it was like Friday night, get out of town, you know. Friday night, I'd go down, or Saturday night, and I'd be there, and I could relax in a meeting, and I didn't have to worry about somebody giving a rebuttal after I shared. I could just be in an NA meeting, and that became real, real precious to me, being in an NA meeting where people actually talked about Narcotics Anonymous. And then we went home and we started a new meeting. You know, these people talked about, well, don't fight it, you know, start a new meeting. And we started a new meeting called the Sicker Than Others Group. Catchy title, eh? Attraction, right? We were so sick we had to read NA literature in our meeting. And it was a rather small meeting. There were two of us for a long, long time. And when you've got a two-person meeting, when somebody walks through that door, you like fight for them. You know? That happened at the microphone this morning, you know. Somebody asked a question and there was like, oh no, I will. And that's what somebody else walking through the door was like for a while. No, this one's mine. You talked to the lamp when you steered him away, for God's sake. So you just shut up and sit over there, and I'll do all the talking. And these people that I had met who were talking about commitment in NA told me that you need to commit to these newcomers like your life depended on it, because someday it may. And it has since. And I've been real grateful that I heard that and that I believed it. Because I gave them everything that I had, everything that I knew, everything that I believed, everything that I'd heard, everything that I thought they might need to hear, and then some. And I've needed it back quite a few times. And it's been there, and I'm grateful. This one guy in particular wanted me to go, wanted us, my partner and I, to go to this thing that he called the World Service Conference. And I thought, oh boy, the World Service Conference. You know? I'm going to go out there and everything's going to be so organized and I'm going to learn all this. And I'd had a chance to stay at this friend's house at the farm for a while and go to meetings and go to service things and read and learn and believe and get comfortable in that Narcotics Anonymous and know that this was where I belonged, nowhere else. The other first steps became obsolete for me when I saw powerless over addiction, over our addiction, that my addiction was no different than anyone else's, regardless of how badly I wanted to believe it was. I was not special, irregardless of how badly I wanted to believe I was special, different, unique. I wasn't. I'm just like you guys, and that saved my life. I just knew that when I went to this World Service Conference, I was going to meet these like real spiritual gurus, and it was going to be totally awesome. And this guy also gave me this piece of input and asked me to input this piece of H&I stuff, this outline for the H&I handbook. And I was like, wow, you want me to do that? Why do you want me to do that? Why don't you do it yourself? And he said, because if it comes from me, it won't be received. And I thought, no, it can't be like that. Nah. And went out there and put in this piece of input. And when they found out that I was from the state next door, they talked about my being a nitpicker. Nitpicker, I'm still not sure what that means. But it didn't sound like a compliment to me at the time. I gave this piece of input that didn't come from me and that the chairperson of that committee did not want. And I saw that piece of input go from that little slip of paper to an H&I handbook. And I was impressed. The process I was allowed to participate in along the way, and I was impressed. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. At this conference, there were these people like trying to out-dope fiend each other. And I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that this was like the world. And I found that when I was sitting in on this committee that I had expected to shut up and listen and learn so much, I found myself mouthing the words that I'd been taught and talking about, well, this is how it's done, and this is how it's done, and this is how it's done. And people saying, wow, that's great. and there was something wrong with this picture. That piece of input, we got to do a lot of work on it, and I didn't finish school. The last couple years of school, I was busy doing much more important things than learning. My goal in life was to do something totally different than anything where I would have to know something. And we started working on this H&I handbook. And instead of somebody saying to me, "You don't know what to do, go over here and sit," or I said, "Well, I'll just do the dishes," and you know those womanly things, "I'll just do the dishes and be of service that way." And they said, "No, we need you. Let me show you what we're doing." And they showed me how they were editing and what was going on, and because I wanted to learn, I did. Because I wanted to learn and because they wanted to teach me so that I could help. Because I was considered a valuable asset. As a warm body who said I was an addict, okay? I was a valuable asset. And, you know, I was hearing people talk earlier about all this work at these things, and there was some real fun too. We were talking about this earlier. I don't have a real good memory, and Robin was reminding me earlier of some of the things that we did during this. We were so burnt out. You know, we had been working on this real hard, and we got to the section of do's and don'ts, and there had to be do's and don'ts. They couldn't be suggestions. It was a directive from the chairperson that it had to be do's and don'ts. And they were the dorkiest sounding do's and don'ts. It was like, do this, don't do this, do this, don't do this. And, you know, after a while, we were like, And so we made a list of a few of our own. And they were like, and it was a couple females doing this, you have to keep that in mind. Do give the male addict your phone number. Do make sure to have personal contact upon his release. Do check the body for, okay, you get the idea. And we wrote this stuff up as input, and we turned it in. And we were waiting for this. Oh, what is this? And later, as all the groups got back together to share their input, and, you know, at this time it had been edited and gone through, we're still waiting, nobody said anything, and this little piece is read in different language, but exactly the same, edited for flow. We had fun. Some of the friendships, most of the friendships that I treasure, that I value as precious, precious gifts, have come from times like that, have come from those workshops where we knew we were together to do something special, and we knew that we had to do it together. This H&I stuff, of course, once I worked on it, it like became my stuff, my literature, my input. And I had to learn some real valuable lessons. I had to learn how to give something and let go of it and accept it when the next person said, "This should be different," or Worse than that, this shouldn't be in there at all. How dare you? Obviously you don't know who I am. I learned things that I don't know how I would have learned any other way. And I'm real grateful for that. Now, you have to understand that it was like my home group didn't really meet on my home group meeting night. My home group met at convention. My home group met at these workshops. My home group was a group of people who lived in different places all over the United States, and who the next time I'd see them, I would know that they had been doing the same things at home. They had taken the same shit, gone through the same things that I had. And we'd nurture one another. We'd get together and make it real for each other. And we'd talk shit about all those people at home. And I know they were talking a lot of shit about us. We nurtured each other. We made it real. And we bonded in ways that I'd never bonded with anybody before. Those people cared about me as a person and an addict. They valued me as a human being. And that was real new for me. There was so much. We'd go to conventions and share with people like our lives depended on it. At that time, it did. At that time, it was so scary that the tiniest little thing could take away my fellowship. The tiniest little thing could take it away and I wouldn't be there anymore. And I was really, really afraid. And when I get afraid, I get pushy. And I had a real good role model, too. I tried to make people do it my way at home. And I learned a lot about surrender. I learned a lot about life on life's terms. About not getting my way. I learned a lot about self-will, about surrender. The book was approved. We had made copies. I didn't talk about that. We made copies of this approval form of the basic text. You know, we got a copy machine connection, and every spare moment, we'd make some more copies, and to this day, the smell of a hot copy machine is like a spiritual thing to me, you know? I smell a hot copy machine. You know, I was area secretary for a while, and it was like, yeah! I went to my first world convention in Milwaukee. And I met other people who'd been doing this for a while. And the more people I met who were committed to NA, the more real it was. We took the magazine there. You know, I'd been at another World Service Conference, and this input was given to create the NA Way magazine. And we sweated over that magazine. I was guilt-tripped, manipulated, conned into participating on that magazine for the first year, and I'm so grateful. I was the person who couldn't put a paragraph together, and I was asked to help edit. and I learned how to help. Again, some of these same people were there, and they taught me what to do. They said, "We need you. Please come help." "Oh, no, I'll do the dishes. I'll just do..." "No, we need you. Please help." Being involved in world service at that time, it was like when you really got involved, your phone was cut off, or you got at least nasty letters from them. It was real unmanageable. I had no idea that someday I would look back on those hectic, crazy days and think of those as the best days, some of the best days of my life. I had no idea. It was like, we're going to do this now, and someday it's going to be real. Someday it's going to be better. You know, someday it's going to be really big, and then it'll be great. And it was great then. And at the time, most of the time, I didn't know it. I went to the East Coast Convention, and I thought, wow, that's really going to be great. They told me, this is one of the biggest NA conventions, and this is going to be wonderful. And I went there and went to this meeting Sunday morning, and they played gospel music at an NA meeting. And I said, isn't that special? Which tradition is that? And I wrote a letter about it. I said, this isn't okay. Because I was taught when something isn't okay, you speak up about it. If it's not okay, say it isn't okay. And I got my first piece of hate mail in reply. And I was told that like entered me into another part of the club. You know, my home group that met at these conventions, and that's what this button is about. The button says, Anonymi, Unity Through Service. We met at these conventions, and we got together, and we nurtured each other and made it real. And they told me, you know, I thought this was like some exclusive thing. And they said, our primary purpose is to become extinct, to not need each other in this way anymore. And if it hadn't been for that, for us bonding together, I wouldn't have made it through those times, and I don't know how many other people would have. We'll never have to know, and I'm grateful for that. All of these great things, you know, we're going on these conventions, and they just weren't living up to the way they were supposed to be, and I learned how to speak up. And I learned how to accept it when somebody didn't like it when I spoke up. And I'm grateful for that. Because of the G&I committee, the Guilt and Intimidation Committee. Y'all have those too, huh? Thank God. Because of that, I was in California when the basic text of Narcotics Anonymous was approved. And I didn't know how much I would value having been in that room. Someone took pictures, and I have pictures of that motion written on the board that I treasure. It's like, I moved to Virginia from Michigan, and there was a hurricane coming, and the hurricane was like, the eye of it was going to pass right over our house, and we live right on the water, and they were talking about a 12-foot storm swell. And we had a real small car, and we were going to have to leave. And it was like, oh, geez, what do we take? You know, do we take these nice clothes? Do we take these paintings? What do we take? We took the minutes from the region that were being worked on at the time. We took our NA T-shirts. We took the gray book. We took the approval form. We were like, oh no, not this, $100 dress, never mind. The stuff that mattered, the stuff that I treasured, that were completely and totally irreplaceable with the NA stuff. That same stuff that is in the room over there, wherever it is. The same stuff that, like, at my house, when anybody goes in the room that it's in, we, like, go in and say, yeah, yeah, you will be frisked when you leave this room. Irreplaceable treasures. We went to so many places and did so many things. And I grew in ways that I never, ever dreamed possible. Met friends that I treasure, that I value very, very highly. In Memphis in 1983, they had this conference. It was a new word to me at the time. And we were going to work on literature, and it was like, yeah. And I remember I worked on the sponsorship pamphlet and on the white book. And, I mean, we really put our all into it, and something real special happened there. The world opened up to me. There were three guys there from England and a woman there from New Zealand. And the woman from New Zealand and I stayed at somebody's apartment and slept in the same bed, and we were like, oh yeah, I did that too. Oh yeah, you're just like me. From New Zealand. It was unbelievable to me that could be the way it was, that a woman like me, just like me, who did the same things. I mean, we thought we were married to the same man, for God's sake, the way we were talking about it. Yeah. Yeah? Either that or his brother. And when they left, I thought, how sad, I'll never see him again. My world was like this. Now, I had tunnel vision. I knew I'd never see him again. I knew I'd have to go back to Flint, Michigan, and that was just going to be it, you know. One, two, Flint, Michigan, there it is. The world opened up for me that weekend. It was incredible. Since then, and at conventions too, at every convention that I went to, it was like, oh no, we're leaving each other, and oh no, it's terrible. And I don't feel that way anymore. When I leave, I know that I'm going to miss you, but I'm going to see you again. This is real. Narcotics Anonymous is real where I live, it's real where you live, and it'll be okay. Now, I may not like it that I'm not going to see you for a while, but it'll be okay. What a concept. It was a new one for me. We had the first NA function for Michigan, and people came from Wisconsin, people came from Illinois, people came from Ohio, people came from like six different states, and only a handful of people came from Flint, Michigan. I didn't understand. There was trouble with the book and with it getting printed. And we kept making these copies. And I saw a copy of this in the other room, too. They wrote us a letter and they said, don't make any more copies. Don't do it. But we weren't going to get copies of the book for probably six more months.